Hey guys, this is Andrew Hansen from rankingsinstitute.com, here with a special interview for you guys today on the subject of niche research. I've got a special guest with us today by the name of Aidan Booth. Aidan, welcome.
Hey, great to be here, Andrew.
Pleasure to have you. I think a lot of the people listening know you, but I think not enough of them know you well enough. That's part of why I wanted to do this call today. But one of the reasons I wanted to bring Aidan in specifically is because he's been marketing online for a long time now, and he has quite a broad experience over a different set of business models. He's been a successful affiliate. He's done SEO successfully. He's created his own product successfully in a digital format, but also more recently in a physical format in the framework of e-commerce. So Aidan's a person who's seen the subject of niche research from many different angles. Don't want to hype you up too much, Aidan. I don't want to put the pressure on there.
No. Good. Just like you were saying, in recent times we have been doing a lot of e-commerce, but I'm definitely from an affiliate background. You know, my first 5 years online were affiliate marketing, search engine optimization. So, you know, we've got a lot of the same mindset there.
Yeah. I think what I wanted to talk to you specifically on this subject was that, I mean, I think you share my belief in the importance of niche selection in the process of someone starting a new business online, whether that is as an e-commerce store
Yep.
or an affiliate marketer or anything else.
Yep.
And within that process, there's so much that needs to be done to make that decision of which niche to enter first. It's one of those rare things where I think people can never have too much insight into the subject.
Yeah.
So there's a few things I wanted to ask you. We're going to do a little interview here for maybe 25 minutes or so, just to roll through some ideas on this subject and sort of have a look at this from the perspective of Aidan as an e-commerce product creator.
Yep.
Here's what I wanted to ask you first. So, like I'm saying, as affiliates, we're always looking for new products to promote, new little markets to enter, new niches that present an opportunity. And we have to do that successfully, build up a number of techniques, a number of strategies in order to try to develop a certainty that a market that we enter will be profitable. And as an e-commerce seller, that process looks a little bit different to you. So I'm curious, when you're looking at markets, when you're looking at products to promote, what's kind of the first thing that stands out to you that points to the fact that this might be a place where there's some opportunity?
Yeah, so the very, very first thing that I look at is price. So how much could I sell the product for? But let's take it one step further. It's not just price. It's really what it really comes down to is how much margin or how much could I earn from each sale. So and it's kind of the same in the affiliate space as well. When I was doing that, I would always want to make kind of at least $20 from each sale that I make. So I carry that over into the e-commerce space, and that basically eliminates any product that's selling for under probably $20 or $25, because I'm just not going to be able to make a $20 margin on each sale. So I think price is the first thing, but then the second thing is a proven demand. So it's no good trying to sell something for $30 if no one wants to buy it. And the way that I really approach this is I look to try to identify other successful sellers. So other people who are successfully selling the product that I'm considering selling. And, you know, this same thing is I apply this to affiliate marketing as well. So, you know, ClickBank has got the gravity scores. Amazon has got something called best seller rank, which basically shows you, you know, where each product is ranked in each certain category. So, for example, if something has got a bestseller rank of 3,000 in the home and kitchen category, that means that that person is the 3,000th seller in that category, which is really good. Okay, so with Amazon, we can see very, very quickly exactly who is performing well, which products are performing well, and we can use that. And then, you know, just taking that validation one step further, I like to check the search volume as well. There's a website I'll pass you afterwards, Andrew. It's called Merchant Words. And it's a keyword tool, but it's a keyword tool for physical products. And I'm not sure exactly how they do it, but they've got very, very good data about the physical products being sold on Amazon. So, you know, that's the next thing that I look at there is the search volume.
Yeah, I'll definitely drop a link to that one under the interview for people. If you wouldn't mind, Ed, I'd like to come back to a couple of things that you said, actually.
Yep.
The first point, we talk a lot about the benefits of selling products with higher price points. Is it fair to say that you would rather sell the kind of product or as an affiliate have the kind of site where you turned over a smaller amount of volume in total but took a higher margin?
Yeah, absolutely, especially with e-commerce. And there's a couple of different pros and cons to doing this. One of the different types of e-commerce websites that we've done over the years is dropshipping, where we don't have to create the product ourselves, we don't have to store it. We only purchase it when someone buys it from us. And in that case, it's great to go after high-priced items. And I'll pass you a website to one of our sites after this as well. It's a site that sells train horns. And these are horns that you install in your car, and they make one heck of a noise when you, when you touch them. But these things sell for about $300 and or more. And because of that, we can make, you know, $100 to $200 margin on each sale. And we've got other cases selling, you know, more kind of industrial type equipment and machinery whereby the product is selling for $1,000 or $1,500. And, you know, one sale, we can be making $700 commission or margin, if you like. If we have a look at a lot of what we're doing on Amazon, selling physical products on Amazon, it's a little bit of a balancing game, because if you want to sell something that is going to cost or sell for $100, then chances are it's actually going to cost you $50 or something to get it, to import it into Amazon and start selling it. So you have to kind of think then about inventory costs. You want to sell high but buy low, essentially, with the Amazon. But, yeah, I do definitely prefer higher-priced items. And more than just higher-priced items, just premium-priced items. So even if I'm selling something, you know, I might be selling something for $25. Maybe all my competitors are selling it for $10 or $15, but I try to differentiate it, try to make it stand out, and as such, charge more for it. So that's another point when we were talking about the research is, you know, I won't automatically discard a product if everyone else is selling it at $15. I'll just think to myself, hey, you know, everyone's selling this at 15. Is there a way that I could sell it at 30 type thing?
Right.
Like that.
Right. Two things I want to draw people's attention to in that was that I think a mistake a lot of people make is that on the affiliate side, I mean, we start out looking for products that have high volume. That's the first criteria. Everyone wants to find something that's got the searches. And in doing that, we can rule out a lot of products that might have an extremely high price point that you might not need to sell many of but to make money, but that have a really low volume. So it sounds like from what you said that you could be perfectly profitable with a product that relative to others didn't get an enormous amount of volume at all, but with that high commission you can make up for a lot of that difference.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, this transitions over exactly very, very well into the affiliate space, where I've sold ClickBank products in the past where I might make $15 commission each sale, and then I've sold others that make $100 a sale. And the one that's making $100 a sale, $100 commission per sale, you know, I only need, you know, four or five of them per month and it starts adding up. Whereas if I'm only getting $15 a sale, I need to make, you know, 20, 30 or 40 sales a month to kind of make it worthwhile. So, yeah, it definitely transitions over to affiliate marketing as well.
Right. And another thing you said there was interesting, which people don't think about as much in the affiliate space, is a premium price product. The first thing I thought of when you said that was that it was a more expensive version of a regular product. So there might be the kind of situation where you come across a product that looks like it has potential as an affiliate, but the price point isn't quite so high. It doesn't look like the margin would be really there for you to make a huge profit on that. But there's the possibility, if you've found the keywords for it, if you've found the search market to search affiliate network, to search offers, to find a premium or, for some reason, more expensive version of that same product that might be able to be sold to that same search market.
Yeah, exactly. And just to kind of go off on another sort of similar tangent there, we also look at the potential of the customer that we've got coming in. So, for example, if you're selling, some product teaching dogs how to be more obedient, that's the type of buyer that if you get them on an email list, then you're going to be able to sell them more products. So in that case, you have to think more down the line rather than just the initial first product, because they are going to become a repeat buyer if you can get them into your email sequence, if you've got that kind of thing on your website. And that's what we do with the e-commerce products as well. So if we're selling, a train horn, then we make sure we get their email, and chances are, they're going to buy another train horn. We've got some statistics that show that, people on that particular train horn site are coming back over and over again. So the average order is not one train horn, it's like 1.5 train horns, per the life, over the lifespan of each customer. So, if you can sell more things on the back end, then that's a time when you can start looking at those products that have got a lower initial payoff.
Very interesting, very interesting. The second point from your first comments about products that look interesting to you that I wanted to come back to was the one about demonstrating that there's a proven seller or a proven demand. It's another common mistake people make when they're new to selecting markets, is that they're looking for the low competition, aren't they? They're looking for the place that you can sell this thing and no one's doing it yet. You could be the first one in this market, where that's often a mistake, because the fact that no one's selling it means no one, there's no demand, there's no space for that. So you want to see somebody already established. You want to see someone who's selling the kind of product exactly like you want to sell it. And if they're successful, you're happy.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I wouldn't want to be the first person to try to sell something online. What we typically try to do is we say, okay, this person's selling mousetraps. How can we make a better mousetrap? Or, what can we do to make our product stand out a little bit? It may be, there's been cases where we've been selling the exact same product, but there's some different things we can do to kind of make it stand out, and that depends where we're selling it. But, I definitely want to get into something where there's already other people having success. Like you say, if there's not, then it's quite often a big indicator that, no one's doing it because it's not something that's been proven viable.
Sure. And to get specific on that point, I mean, I know the metrics of this are different whether you're an e-commerce seller or an affiliate, but what kind of things are you looking for as an e-commerce product creator to indicate to you that someone is really crushing it in this market?
Yeah, so there's a few things. If we are talking specifically about selling white label products, like selling your own physical products on Amazon, then the first thing I look at is the bestseller ranking, because this is the ultimate metric. I mean, this here is, proof of the sales that they're making on a daily basis, and you can kind of work that backwards. So for the bestseller ranking, just to give you a general guideline, if the bestseller ranking is under 5,000, so between 0 and 5,000, that means they're in the top 5,000 sellers in that particular category, and then we're good to go. So that's the first thing. Another way we can tell if someone is actually crushing it is if they've got a lot of reviews. So on Amazon, again, that's something that you can see just by looking at it. You can also see how current those reviews are. So if you scroll down and look a little bit more closely, you can see that, how many reviews have been in the last week, how many in the last month, and that's another way to know that they're crushing it. Another thing that I like to do as well is have a look and try to work out how sophisticated the competition are. And if they've got a good website, potentially they've got some opt-in pages, squeeze pages, then that there is probably a sign that they are a little bit more involved with what they're doing.
Yeah, and this is important because these same metrics can carry over for people who are looking to promote products as an affiliate on Amazon, right? The same, looking at the bestseller rankings, looking at the number of views can be indicators of popularity of the potential profitability of a product that you might choose to promote. So that's really important for you guys listening.
Yeah, absolutely. And it transitions over into to Kindle as well. Absolutely. The other thing that you can look at if you're an affiliate approaching the whole Amazon thing is look at how well the listing is set up of the product that you want to promote. Because if, for example, they've got good photos, they've got a really professional head description, that makes a massive difference to their longevity on Amazon. People are launching new products all the time. So if you're promoting, I don't know, some kid's toy, chances are the person that you're promoting is going to be facing a lot of competition. So you want to make sure that you're promoting someone who has got a proven track record and they're looking like they're not going anywhere soon. So they're going to always kind of be, at the top of the field because they've got a very well set up listing.
And my audio cut out for about a second there. I just want to make sure we totally caught what you said. So did you mean looking at the actual seller to check that this is not, say, the first product that they've set up and they're not only just selling this one thing for this period of time, but they have a number of products in their store? Is that the kind of thing?
That would also be a good indicator. But what I was really meaning is that if they are selling just one individual product, then make sure that they've got that product set up, that product listing set up properly. So they've got a really good description, they've got good photos, they've got a good product title. Basically, you want to make sure that they, if you're going to be promoting them as an affiliate, you want to make sure that they are kind of on top of their game and they're going to maintain, the good conversions that they've probably already got. Because if you're sending traffic to their listing, you want to make sure it converts, and things like photos are absolutely, critical for that, the photos that they've got of the product they're selling.
Got it, yeah. The other reason I love this as an analysis strategy is that when you do things like this, when you come across a product and you start to analyze what it's doing on Amazon, like how many reviews it has, where is it in the bestseller rankings for its category, it can alert you to other product ideas in similar markets as well, ideas that you might not have come across in your keyword research yet, but that you can feed back into your keyword analysis and use to uncover totally new opportunities. Like you might come across one product that looks good, it's ranking okay in the bestseller category, but you immediately see that there's a different brand of product that's ranked highest, it's obviously selling a lot more with more reviews, and you run it through your analysis, it looks even better. It has lower competition, it has more search volume, and so on. So this can really give you quite a broad view of your market doing some of these techniques, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll give you one other thing that that I do, and this, to be honest, is probably one of the ways that I've found my absolute best products, my most successful products that we're selling, is identifying a competitor, so a seller on Amazon. And with all the sellers on Amazon, if you go to any product page, you'll see a little link right next to the title of the product, and that's usually the brand name of the person or the company that's selling the product. And if you click on that, you're taken to a page which shows you all the products that that particular person is selling. And if they are a savvy internet marketer, then chances are they've already gone out there and done so much of the hard work for you. So you can literally at that point just cherry pick their very best ideas and start using them for yourself. They've done all the hard work. That's something that I've used a lot. I continue using it all the time. Anytime I'm doing niche research is just dive into what other people are selling because it's all out there for you. And the same is true with Kindle books as well.
Mate, that is really cool. I might just get you to go to explain that one again so we can get those links right. This is where it would have been cool to have the live screen, but I didn't know we would get into such good specific examples. But so what you mean is you come across a listing of a product that you think is solid.
Yep.
I'm typing it in while we're doing this so we can walk me through the steps now.
Yeah, so basically what you want to do is you identify a product that you think is solid, and then you open up that product in Amazon. So let's say, for example, a luggage strap that goes around your suitcase. It's selling well in Amazon. You open up that product page specific to that product, and right near the title of that page, right near the title of the product, sort of at the top of Amazon, there's going to be a little brand name, which...
It says buy somebody.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's got a link to the brand name.
That okay, would
so
be
you
it.
Click
so
on
you,
the brand
you
name.
Click on that, and then typically it'll come up with a lot of the other products that they are selling. And quite often, oftentimes, if this is just a savvy internet marketer, they might not even be all in the same niche. They might be doing one travel related product, one wedding related product, one kitchen related product, and they're doing these because they have identified that these are really, really good products. And you know, one other thing, just to expand on that, we can get into more detail if you like, but you can do the same kind of thing with eBay. So with eBay, you can look at the top sellers that are selling different products, and you can go in and have a look at what they're selling, and it tells you exactly how many products they've actually sold in the last X amount of time or since they've had that listing up. So I was looking at one today, for example, and it said they must have had 20 different products inside their eBay account. This is one eBay seller. And next to each product was telling me exactly how many of each product they had sold. So, that's another sort of research tool. I can give you some links to this stuff as well.
Yeah, that would be cool. I was just doing this while you were explaining it, and this isn't the best example, but just a really simple one. Like I was doing vacuum cleaners,
yep.
And already just clicking on that, the brand name of this vacuum cleaner, which wasn't one that I recognized, it showed me some niches that I wouldn't have thought of, things that this person is selling. So it started with vacuum cleaners, but it got to steam mops, it got to pet hair erasers, it got to like carpet cleaning vacuums, which turn out to be way more expensive.
Yeah.
So you could pretty much do that with any product you come across and find a haven of new niche ideas, new product ideas.
Yeah, absolutely. And just taking it one more tip for Amazon is when you go to the Amazon homepage, on the left-hand side near the top, there's a drop-down menu, and in that menu, there's something that says full directory. It shows you a full kind of directory, almost like a site map of all the different categories that Amazon has got and subcategories. And this is a great place to start your research because, for example, you can dive down into categories that you've probably never even thought of. Like one that comes to mind is the industrial category. And then all of a sudden you're finding all kinds of different tools. And you can just imagine the type of niche sites that you could dive into with that. You'd probably have very low competition, but these are products that are selling incredibly well. And you can see all of that.
Yeah, that is extremely powerful, mate. I love stuff like this because a lot of the time, particularly as affiliates, well, e-commerce store owners too, like we're looking for opportunities outside of our own areas of knowledge and interests. Like, I have no idea that steam mops are a product that people buy a lot. I don't know anything about train horns or whatever else. And these kind of techniques show you ideas that you couldn't have possibly thought up in your own head. You weren't going to come across them in life.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
All right. In case we run out of time, let's move on quickly. This has been fantastic so far, mate.
Cool.
So let's talk about competition a little bit next. So the next piece of this puzzle in most business models is you've come across an opportunity, something that looks like you'll be able to sell a lot of them, and the numbers look right, the volume looks right, the demand of the market looks right. Some consideration has to be given to competition, like how difficult is it going to be for me to break into this market, and with my best effort, where might I eventually be able to sit? So when you're looking at products as an e-commerce product creator, what's the first thing that you look at? What's the first thing that, let's say, that makes you think, yes, this market is fine, I could get into this market?
Yeah, so the great thing about Amazon, if we just stick to Amazon for the time being, is that if you type in any keyword, it's going to show you a page of results. And you can see at a glance the review count. And the review count is probably the thing that's really going to make or break this. Because if the top products have all got, hundreds and hundreds of reviews, say I'm searching for mops, for example, and the top five or six mops have all got several hundred reviews, then that's going to look like pretty stiff competition. But I guess the thing that I would want to kind of hammer home here is that the deciding that what we do is we like to have a very clear understanding from the outset of how we're going to get this traffic, and then we gauge the competition based on that. So, for example, if our marketing plan is kind of relying on us launching a product on Amazon and getting that product onto the first page of Amazon for its keyword, then we're going to be quite worried about the other competitors' reviews and things like that. If, however, we are looking at driving traffic from a different channel, like paid ads or something like that, then I wouldn't be too worried about the review count. But yeah, I mean, if I had to say just one thing, I think it would be the review count initially, because that can, in most cases, we are trying to get, like, you know, like we're trying to get a top page ranking in Google, we're trying to get the first page ranking in Amazon as well. And if you don't get it, you don't get the traffic. So review count's a big one.
Right. So putting that more broadly, what you're looking for essentially is people who are doing exactly what you want to do, but who are really well established and have some base of resources or authority that you think it will be difficult or time consuming to overcome, to build to.
Yeah, exactly. Because imagine for a minute that we get into a niche and we're selling luggage straps, and there's, you know, 10 other existing brands also selling luggage straps, and they've all got several hundred reviews on Amazon. We launch our luggage strap and we've got zero reviews, or let's say we've got 5 or 10 reviews, we're still not going to be taken as seriously. So, yeah, I mean, it all comes down to gauging the overall strength, I guess, of your competitor, seeing how sophisticated they are. Do they have a website? Would they likely have a follow-up email sequence in place? Are they optimizing their page or their listing very well, or do they kind of look like they don't really know what they're doing? And ideally, it's fine to have, you know, 3 or 4 really super strong competitors, because you can always carve out a tiny slice of the market. But if most of the competitors on the first page of Amazon are strong, then that's a big warning sign.
Right, and it translates quite directly into the people who are listening who are trying to attain search engine traffic, because it's not necessarily a bad thing if there's one person who's ranking on page one of the search engines who's doing what you do, who've got a piece of content, they've built up some authority, they've got plenty of links or whatever. But if the whole page is full of people doing exactly that, who are all strong, all authoritative, all got quality content, then the picture starts to look a little different.
Yep. Exactly. And you know, that's something I guess I took to e-commerce from affiliate marketing, because when I used to analyze, you know, I want to get a page one ranking in Google, and I'm analyzing the top 10 or however many results, if everyone is super strong, then I look, you know, it looks like there's not much room for me to get in there. So, I mean, it's a very, very similar concept.
Yeah. Another thing that you said that I want to make sure people caught completely was that you go through this process of sort of looking at the people who are doing the same thing that you want to do, looking at your competitors, and try to work out if there's a hole in their game, if there's something that they're doing that's not that good that you could do better than them. And this translates perfectly well to affiliate sites and content marketing as well, right?
Yep, absolutely. I mean, I think you've pretty much summed it up there. I mean, if you're looking at an affiliate website and they don't have an email series, then that's something that you can do. If they're not running advertising, then that's probably a potential you know, channel of traffic as well. So yeah, with the e-commerce thing, it's a lot of it is about the perceived value. So and that transitions into e-commerce stores as well, affiliate stores as well, because if you've got a absolutely hideous affiliate site, like, you know, some that I was kind of building 10 years ago, then you're not going to be taken as seriously and you won't get as many conversions. And it's the same with, you know, physical products on Amazon or e-commerce stores. If you don't have, you know, brilliant photography, then you're already kind of behind the eight ball before you've even started.
Yeah, right. And I can see it being really important to, like, just to understand what the key things are for your business model that make the difference to bottom line. So when it's affiliate sites, when you're looking at reviews and you see someone, say, who's ranking, and you think, this person's kind of already hitting this product that I want to sell, they seem to be ranking already, like, is it really possible for me to beat them? The things that you, like, if you know the things that really move sales in that model, you can make a decision. So you can look at their content and be like, well, look, is this person really going to be converting very well with this piece of content? If the answer is no, then that's their hole. That's the gap, right?
Yeah.
Or if it's, does this person have any backlinks really to have gotten into this position? If the answer is no, then you know that moves stuff. So you could beat them in that. You could end up taking their position. So it really seems to depend a lot on like your monetization strategy on that particular point.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Aidan, let me ask you this to kind of finish things off here. I wish we had more time to delve into these things more deeply because we could probably, you and I could talk all day on this stuff. There's a lot of people face the challenge when they're getting started of choosing between either a market where the ceiling for profit is not that high, like the overall amount of money or the potential for profit, rather, has a limit, but it's lower competition so they could get into it and start making money more quickly versus the kind of market that has a much bigger potential but is going to take longer to establish yourself in it. How do you weigh up those two factors and make decisions about between those two, which are the better markets to enter?
Yeah, so I think it it will differ a little bit depending on where you are in your sort of internet marketing career, I guess, because I know for me personally, when I was getting started and if I was talking to someone who was just starting out, I would say, you know, go for the low-hanging fruit, even if you know that your website's going to top out at $500 or $1,000 a month, because that's going to be able to fund your bigger projects. We always kind of have a long-term play that we're working on. So we're always working on something that is probably, you know, very competitive, but little by little, if we can crack into it, then we've got a big payoff waiting for us. But at the same time, we balance them out with opportunities where we can get, you know, a lot faster results. So I think initially, if I had to start from scratch over again, I would be favoring the easier opportunities to get started, because some of my old niche sites that are, you know, 7 or 8 years old, they were so specific, but they're still making me, you know, several hundred dollars a month today. Whereas some of the ones where I was in competitive markets, because I haven't stayed focused in those markets, they're not nowadays they're not really doing anything because I kind of withdrew from the marketplace, where the stuff that I did in the weaker market, my sites have still got good rankings and they're still driving traffic every day and they're still making money. So I think, at least for me personally getting started, I would recommend people to start with the easier stuff first, and then as you progress, as you start making more money, start to think about taking on the occasional sort of long-term play or something where you know it's going to take longer but the payoffs are bigger.
Yeah, I think that's really smart as well, because especially for someone getting started, it helps build your confidence. It helps your mental game. Like, it was just having that success under your belt, having one or two sites that have gotten off the ground and that have become profitable. It's the same set of principles. It's the same strategies usually that you'll apply when you're taking that to a bigger market. It's just usually more work and more of the same stuff. So if you've got a couple under your belt, you feel like you know how to do this, then it makes attacking those bigger markets easier.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Aidan, this has been an illuminating chat. I want to thank you for your time quickly.
No, it's great. I mean, always looking forward to getting together with you and doing these kind of things.
We will make sure that we get those links. You and I will chat after we hang up here, and I'll make sure I get those links for everyone to throw underneath the recording. But again, just a big thanks for sharing your time with us here, for sharing all those resources. We probably should do this again at some point just to dig into some of these ideas a little more deeply, because there's always more to discuss.
Absolutely. And maybe I'd like to, you know, put you on the receiving end next time, because I know you've got a lot of strategies that I don't know all that much about, and I think that you know, that I could be applying them a lot more to my business as well. So yeah, we'll definitely have to arrange another time like this.
It's super nerdy, but there's always more to talk about when it comes to niche research.
You bet.
Mate, on behalf of everyone, again, just thanks for your time. I hope we can do this again. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks. See you next time, guys.
Cheers.